to minute 73 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Sean German of the Next Scene Podcast. Welcome, Sean.
Oh, thanks for having me. So glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad I was able to finally get you in at least for one episode. You know, I've been trying to get you for the whole week and it just didn't work. So, all right, one episode is good.
All right. Nope. I just couldn't escape.
Ah, you mean you're in the cooler?
Yeah, yeah, in the cooler.
That's fine, that's fine. Hopefully by the end of this episode, you'll be able to escape.
Yes.
If not, then I can maybe get you for tomorrow also.
I'll just keep digging.
Exactly. So episode 73 starts with Colin saying, checkmate, and goes all the way till Danny screams, pull. So we have a very interesting minute to be dealing with here. Basically finishes off the scene that we discussed the last few days with Werner actually finally getting extorted for the fact that he lost his wallet. So we have Henley, James Garner, basically telling him to give him a camera, to get him a camera, and then maybe he'll be able to find his wallet. That was the end of yesterday's minute. And today's minute, it starts with Colin, where Henley and Colin are playing chess. We got the impression over the last few days that Henley was actually doing better than Colin. But apparently Colin is able to find a way to come back and starts off with checkmate. Now, I'm not much of a chess player, so I don't know if you took a look at the board to try to figure out if it really is checkmate or not. Unfortunately, you can't zoom in on these type of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see that he places his bishop in a position where where it's in direct line with his king. But besides that, it's a little fuzzy from my perspective to try and figure out how much is it, how close that really is to a checkmate.
Yeah, I mean, I know the basic rules. I don't know chess enough to kind of analyze the board and, you know, kind of see how good this move is. But I like it. It's a little funny moment. Like, this is, you know, certainly not a comedy, but it's got some of these lighter moments that, and I think it's, you know, kind of tells us a little bit about this character that with, you know, with what went on previously with Werner and the stuff, the talk about the lost wallet and the camera and everything, that at least one of these players is able to keep his eyes or keep his mind on the game.
Yeah, I was thinking that also. I was thinking that Henley was a little distracted here. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, yesterday's minute, we see that Colin is still looking at the board the whole time as mm-hmm. Henley is, you know, reminding or telling Werner what he needs to give him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right about that. You know, Colin, despite all this, Colin is confident that he's going to get his camera. So, you know, I might as well continue with playing and find a way to checkmate. And yeah. I mean, I love James Gardner's reaction to it. I mean, if you look at his face, he's like, what? he was definitely not expecting that to happen.
Yeah, the look of satisfaction on one side of the board versus the other confusion of where did that come from?
Exactly.
On the other side.
This is something that again, as we both mentioned, we're not really chess players, but mm-hmm. you'd think that someone who is more of an avid chess player, you know, would try to be as in tune to what's going on in the game, even if you're doing other things. It could also just be a way to pass time. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think you have much else to do at night.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of downtime.
Maybe they got to learn how to play chess. Actually, that's very possible. Also, that you know, Colin seems like someone who would be more into playing chess than Henley. He's more cultivated or civilized, you know, higher mm-hmm. in the higher echelon type of thing. I mean, when, you know, a few weeks ago we had the whole discussion about tea. You know, where basically Colin says, you know, that he can't have tea without milk. That's so uncivilized. And Henley's response was, I think I had tea once when I was in the hospital. Meaning that's medicine.
So right.
It tells us more about the difference between their status.
Right. Well, I think that, status, but I was thinking more of their, you know, the kind of the personality. What kind of, is it a, you know, one is a man of thought, more of a chess player, while maybe the other one is more a man of action, maybe has more street smarts than chessboard smarts.
For sure. I mean, that's what we know about Henley. Henley is, you know, he gets by the seat of his pants. There's no question about it. You know, he's the guy who has to get whatever you need to get. He doesn't need to think it through completely. He needs to say, okay, I need this. How am I going to get it? And with Colin being the forger, So obviously he needs to be much more meticulous and has to, you know, think ahead of how he's doing every single thing. So I think you made a great point. I think that really makes
sense. Well, it kind of really good. And you mentioned, you know, kind of the nickname, the Forger, and his background kind of fits in with like this little moment that's kind of, obviously this chess game doesn't play into the larger storyline and the plot of the POWs and trying to escape, but it's not a throwaway scene. It does give us these little glimpses into the characters and their personalities.
Yeah, I mean, this movie does a great job of that. I mean, you have so many. It really is one of the first big ensemble films, and they do such a great job of developing each and every one of these characters in different ways. I mean, because you know, this is I've mentioned this many times. I'm sure all the listeners have heard me say this quite often, but this is basically a heist movie. And you know, each of the characters has their specialty that they have to do in order to be able to get this heist done. That the way that they find the story to develop each of these characters is just done so well, because you can watch the movie afterwards and you're like, okay, this is what this guy did and this is what this guy did. You know, they're all distinct in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, so we move on from there, and we then get a shot of Willie digging in the tunnel, which, again, Sturgis does an amazing job in this movie of giving us so much detail with everything that's going on. I mean, here you see a character who's digging. That's all he's doing. He's digging. But just look at everything that he does while he's digging. It just gives us so much of an impression as to the difficulty of this task and the difficulty of setting it up for these prisoners. I mean, he looks like he's got, you know, his shovel, it looks like it's a cutout tin can that has a piece of wood, you know, stuck to be the handle. Okay, he has a little light next to him, which from what I've read, they actually in the real escape, they use, I think, margarine as the as a way to ignite, you know, these flames that they use as lights in the tunnel. You know, he's got a real shovel. He's got like a bucket or a basket container where he's putting the dirt in. And then he has to lift that up while he's lying on his back and put it on the trolley, which you can see he's already put one on there. I mean, first of all, he's lying in a very, very strange and awkward position. That cannot be comfortable for the actor or for the character. You know, to be able to while you're lying on your back, lift up a basket filled with dirt. I mean, I'm not even going to try and guess how much dirt is in there and how heavy it is, but it's not light.
Yeah, and it's got to be awkward to have to lift it and sort of push it away to put it on, you know, on the cart.
Exactly. But we're not even going to talk about how he was able to put the first one on there.
Well, yeah. The first one must have been even harder. And just the setup for the scene, like the feeling, the claustrophobic feeling to get the scene, we can see, you know, we see the floor, we can see the ceiling, we see how narrow this passage is. The character that Willie's laying down and barely has, you know, room to lift his head, but somehow he's managing to dig, really does a good job of giving us that sense of, you know, the tight space.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, I'm curious to know how much space they actually had, you know, from a filming perspective. You know, when because as we can tell, there are three walls here that are there. It's not even something. This isn't something that you know, John Layton can try and fake. He's definitely there where something's close to his head and something's close to, you know, and he's close to the floor. Obviously, the other end is probably completely open, so therefore he's not as claustrophobic, but it still gives us that the shot is done so well that it makes us believe that he's really there. Now, we can all be thankful that they didn't do what the real prisoners did, because when they all dug, they dug completely naked, so we should be glad that we're not seeing that, because logistically in the real escape, obviously, you know, they want to get their clothes all dirty.
Yeah, obviously that would have attracted attention if you're walking around the yard covered with dirt.
Yeah.
Someone might get suspicious.
Exactly. And it would draw too much attention if they had them all naked on the film. So, you know, we could be grateful for that too.
Yes. That's a much different film.
Yes, yes. And also they, you know, they have someone to do their laundry in the movie. I mean, I one of the things I love about this movie is the fact that basically all the characters have the same clothes, but they somehow are able to get them laundered whenever they need to. Mm-hmm. You know, they're dealing with dirt, they're walking around, you know, most movies that with World War II POWs, you know, their clothes are all cut up. You know, they're walking around in rags because they're in such bad conditions. And here, I mean, you, as we just mentioned about with Henley, I mean, he's wearing a turtleneck.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just fun looking at that. And then what Willie does is he takes a stick and taps on the trolley twice, which this is the first time we get to see this in the whole movie, where this is their signal. You know, if you hear the double tap, that means pull the trolley, which is also ingenious, the whole way that they set up this whole system. You put a trolley with ropes on either ends, and when you hear the double tap, you just pull it.
You just pull it. We see that the rope, the rope on Willie's end, so he can pull he can pull the trolley back to him. We see the rope on the other end that Danny's pulling to pull the dirt out of the tunnel.
Yeah. I mean, it's very well thought out. Part of it comes from the original book about how it's explained of what they did, but they do use a little bit of license here to give us a better impression that this system is really working well. And so basically then we see they cut to a scene where you have Danny and Sedgwick sitting in one of the, I guess you could say, rest stations or way stations along the way. They didn't build the tunnel, you know, straight the whole 335 feet without rest stops along the way, which is also quite ingenious to do, because this way you can get more people through at any given time, because you have people, you know, you don't have traffic, because someone can stop at the rest stop, you know, while they're waiting for someone else to come in or whatever the case may be, which it obviously plays in a lot later when we see the escape of how they use this to their advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Having this room there. So you see Cedric is working on the air pump and Danny is pulling in the rope. Then we get Roger showing up, and Roger starts asking the same question that he's asked Cedric numerous times before. What's going on with the air pump? You know, when's it going to be ready? And it's pretty funny because, like, you see that he's working on it. So, like, why would he even ask that?
Yeah.
You know, if he's, oh. I mean, we saw a few weeks ago that when he was making the air pump, you know, he's making the air ducts and they're, you know, with the hammers and everything like that. So they're doing that in their workshop. So if he's already there, so then what's the big question here? You know, is the question, okay, I see that you're here. Is it, you know, are you installing it, or are you just checking things out, or, you know, what are you doing here? And then Cedric just gives his usual answer. Oh, I'll have it ready by tomorrow. So Roger, you know, snaps back at him. Well, you know, you're badly behind schedule. You're
behind schedule. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, managers are going to manage.
That's true. That's true. And then the next thing he does, and he asks Danny how things are going. So, you know, Roger is the best kind of manager here. He's going and checking everyone and seeing that everyone's doing what they should be doing. There's no question about that. And he does a good job of it, because, you know, he comes into there and he first asks Cedric, and then he asks Danny. So Danny should have expected that this was the question that was coming up.
Yeah, he's coming up. And Danny's got his complaint ready.
Yeah.
Or maybe not complaint, but they're having problems with the operation. And then he starts with three times and then gets interrupted by a fourth.
Yes. Which this is great filmmaking, the way that they do it, because the editing here is superb. You know, the fact that you know, he's in the middle of talking about it, and then they quickly cut. They let you hear the crack of the dirt falling. Now, I don't really know what that crack really means, because it sounds as if wood is breaking. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Willie, when they cut to him, you know, and he quickly jumps onto his stomach, you don't see any wood falling on him. You just see a lot of dirt falling on him.
Yeah, well, I think the point is that they don't have enough wood to support, you know, all the way as far as they've dug in the tunnel. So yeah, I'm not sure whatever it is that's cracking, it's good enough that kind of gives Willie a little bit of a warning so he can brace himself. But before the tunnel falls in. But yeah, I like the way this is constructed because it's a little bit of, you know, Roger coming in and kind of asking these questions. It's a little bit of, I guess, exposition just for our benefit to kind of give give the characters, you know, a chance to report for our sake. Sedgwick and Danny kind of fill us in on how things are going. But it's also kind of natural of, an officer slash manager would come in and kind of just check in and see, you know, how things are going, how things are progressing.
Right.
Yeah.
No question about that. Yeah, but I mean, you also mentioned that Willie has that fraction of a second to quickly turn over. You know, that's I guess helpful too.
Yeah, I like this minute. I like that. Kind of reminds us that this is a heist and this is a, you know, war movie. This is a dangerous operation. That there is danger, and it may seem kind of starts off sort of mundane. Just, you know, there's a lot of digging and a lot of dirt they have to move, and they spend a lot of time just filling up buckets and empty, you know, dumping out the dirt and sending the bucket back to be refilled. But there's always that, you know, the possibility of danger lurks around every corner. And then suddenly, you know, as we see this minute, suddenly the danger rears its head. That this is, you know, even with just the mundane work that they've got to go through, there's the risk of a cave-in, in addition to the risk from the guards and getting discovered and all the other things that could go wrong.
Right. And I mean, it's also perfect timing because, you know, he's just mentioning that we had three cave-ins today. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, you know, he shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. He jinxed. Speaking of the devil, he jinxed it. Exactly. Maybe.
He jinxed it and just saying, oh, but maybe they planned it and they wanted to show Roger that this does happen. We're not just saying that it happens.
Yeah.
All right, Willie, Roger's coming. Let's have a cave in.
Let's have a cave.
So Danny and Sedgwick, you know, jump to, you know, I really like the way that they jump into action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that also gives us more of an idea of the dangers involved here. You know, this is something that you immediately have to take care of. You know, Danny jumps on the trolley and forgets about the rope and just, you know, dog paddles his way down quickly as possible. And while he's going by, we get to see how many lamps they have to light each time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't count the number of lamps. I probably should. But it's interesting the fact that, you know, we as I mentioned earlier, you know, they made each of these lamps, you know, using margarine oil or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot here.
Yeah, I think I counted four that Danny paddles past before getting to Willie.
Right.
It looks like they're maybe every 10 feet in the tunnel.
Maybe that's their way of marking the distance.
Yeah, you know, possibly.
I mean, obviously, they have the string that they use also. You know, this is another way for them. But so that's interesting how they do that here. One, two, three, four. You're right. Four until he gets them. Plus, there's the one that apparently just got stamped out.
So that there's like the fourth is at Willie's feet, and there would have been the fifth where, you know, kind of at the head where Willie's working. But so they instantly know. Yeah, so Danny jumps right on the trolley to start paddling out to Willie. And then Sedgwick jumps in to take Danny's place at the head of the tunnel. I guess to, you know, he knows he's going to have to pull Willie out.
Exactly. I mean, again, they've done this four times today, or three times already.
The three times. This is the
fourth time.
So actually kind of fortunate that this happened during the transfer. This happened while Willie was digging, while he had the trolley on his end. I imagine that's happened where, you know, someone, Danny or Sedgwick's had to crawl in to pull Willie out of a cave-in without having the trolley on their end and being able to kind of paddle out.
That's a really good point. The question is how, you know, would they have tried to pull the trolley back and then go? Because, you know, maybe they don't know if it has, you know, one basket of dirt on it or no basket of dirt.
Yeah.
It's just the idea of pulling it as quickly as possible and then having to jump on it. I mean, that, as you said, it's fortunate that it happened this way.
Yeah.
Good thing they have good screenwriters.
Yeah. Well, I guess they'd have to make it
convenient.
Because if he didn't pull the trolley back, then when he got there, the trolley would be between Danny and Willie. So yes. How could he get to Willie to put him on? And I'm guessing the paddling goes much faster than the crawling, so that even kind of pulling the trolley back, removing any dirt that's on it, and then paddling back to Willie, I'm guessing that's faster than crawling.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess they pull it back, true. But...
Well, they never let us check that out, so we'll never know.
We'll never
just have to speculate. And Danny pulls Willie out of the dirt, and there was a lot of dirt on him.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully for John Layton's sake, they didn't have to redo the scene that many times. You know, okay, we're gonna pile you put you know a ton of dirt on top of you, and then we're gonna pull you out.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's got his face covered in dirt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's coughing a little bit. You know, and then Danny says to him, "So you're all right?" And then he screams, "Pull!"
Pull.
And that basically ends the minute, because we see Roger and Cedric begin to pull the rope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cedric looks like he's really exerting himself by checking that. Yeah, so that's the end of this minute. Do you have anything else you want to say about the minute?
Well, I think that the use of the score, and of course you talked about, I mean, the great score. The soundtrack to this movie, I think, is probably better, maybe even better known than the film. I mean, it's just the iconic. But so we get the transition that the chess scene, we get the end of that, you know, chess scene with Werner, where there's no background music at all. It's just the dialogue. And then kind of when we go down to the tunnel, we get a little bit of the score and the music. And then we get the shakeup with... The cave-in and everything, just kind of the use of sound in the background.
There's no question. Yeah. Bernstein does an amazing job with the score here. I mean, I've heard that the way that he set up the score, that he created the score, is he created sub themes for each and every one of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a music expert, so I wouldn't be able to, I can't notice that. In a few weeks, we're actually going to have a music expert on. Hopefully, she'll be able to give us a little bit of insight into that, as to how that really does play into the whole storyline. But the music here is definitely another character. There's no mm-hmm. question about the way it goes from somber tones to happier tones to comedic tones. You know, it doesn't stay on one straight level. It jumps around a lot, which helps make it that much more interesting to listen to.
Yeah,
as absolutely. The story moves along.
Absolutely.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to say about the movie in general?
Just that this is a great movie. And thank you for covering it one minute at a time. This is this certainly holds up to this kind of level of scrutiny. It really is a great film.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because of it has to do with the level of detail in this entire film. There's no question about it. I mean, come on, you and I just spent 20 some odd minutes talking about two little scenes.
Yeah,
and that's it. But there's so much to talk about, and that's what makes it so fascinating to talk about this movie and to watch it. Obviously.
Yes.
All right. So, do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you, Sean?
Sure. Well, as you said in the beginning, my current podcast is Next Scene Podcast. We're at nextscenepod.com and Next Scene Pod on the social medias. That's a show that I do with my brother, Brian, where we're covering pop culture one scene at a time. I've also got previous shows. I covered a couple movies, 1 minute at a time, as you do for The Great Escape. I did This is Spinal Tap with Spinal Tap Minute, and I covered Groundhog Day. Had a show, Groundhog Minute. My home base where you can find all that stuff, if you go to catandsean.org, and it's cat, C-A-T, and Sean, S-E-A-N.org, and that I link to all my podcasts and all my guest appearances and whatnot. So, folks, if you want to hear more from me, you can check that out.
All right. Very cool. Thanks a lot, Sean. While you're looking at Sean's stuff, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to this show. You can contact us by email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. Our website's thegreatescapeminute.com. You can contact us on Twitter at GreatEscapeMXM. So until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.